welcome to Charlie Foxtrot, a Stargate Universe podcast. I'm Zetra.
And I'm Boom!
And we get to our favorite episode!
That's why I did that!
Yay!
Yay! This episode is so good. I don't understand why it didn't get, like, a Hugo Award or something like that.
It's really, really cool.
It is. It's, like, the best sci-fi ever. Like, just even divorced from Stargate, it's just a good sci-fi story.
And in addition to being a good sci-fi story on its own, it also starts playing with the idea that the gate can do things that maybe are not things we're totally used to.
Right.
or reminding us if we, you know, knew it from some other situation.
Right. Well, I think there's an SGU episode? Not SGU. This is SGU. SG-1 episode.
Oh, SG-1.
Similar. Isn't it called The Letter? I think it had to do with time differences.
Well, I know there's some situation where Weir gets sent way back in time and, like, lives the whole fall of Atlantis the first time.
Oh, you're right. It's Letters from Pegasus, isn't it? And it's,
yes, it is.
ASGA. Sorry, yes, you're right. And that had to do with weird gateness, didn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, I haven't seen it in so long. Because I remember you bringing it up.
Like, I watched it like last week.
Right.
But I wasn't paying
and I was
attention.
Just like, huh, I know that was first season, but I don't even remember anything about that.
Yeah, when I want to pay attention, I watch Universe. When I want background noise, I watch Atlantis.
Yeah, I take Atlantis with me to the gym.
That seems fair.
Yeah. So anyways, we're going to start with them coming through the Stargate, and it's all through the Okino feed, and you know there's trouble because it keeps skipping and elongating things.
It's
and,
a little sketchy.
Yeah.
It's also very interesting what they decided to use from the intro of like history. Like, they kind of covered all their problems. Like, we have water, we have this, and the idea of this planet, I think, is food, right?
I guess so. They didn't turn it as dire as the other episodes, right? Like, we really need water. We really need to not explode. This time it's probably like,
But obviously Destiny stopped here for a reason. We know that now.
Yeah, Destiny stopped there to get the venom, I'm betting.
Well, yes.
But they don't know that.
Yeah, they can't know that to start with.
Right.
So we get, I don't know, I really like seeing, like, an actual organized away team that's not in critical...
Yeah.
Explosion.
Like, this is what it's usually like on the planets, only we don't get to see it because that's boring television.
Yeah, like, TJ's joking around with Greer and they won't tell Eli what they're saying, which means it was probably mean.
Right.
Eli's wandering around with Okino and everybody's like, do something useful, damn it.
Right, Chloe's it's her first time on the planet. I bet it's after seeing the Okino footage as her two alternate selves in the future, I'm sure she doesn't want to go onto the planet anytime soon. And Eli is not helping. He's like, aren't you scared? You should be, like, totally scared right now. Like, come on, Eli.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting away team. We've got Park, we've got Rush, we've got Scott and Greer and TJ.
Mm-hmm.
Poor Franklin. Once again, what the hell is Franklin doing here? Like,
I don't know.
He makes no impression.
You know, Brody's technically on that away team because they say that he... Oh, no, he just died of the virus. Never mind.
No, Brody is on the planet.
Oh, that's right.
In the initial
Okino
footage.
Brody died.
Brody and Volker both are.
Yeah.
Because Volker is the first one to get ill.
Right. And I don't remember how Brody got it, but I do remember them saying, and Brody's dead. And I was like, no!
Yeah. It's... Yeah.
Don't do that to my baby. But yeah, I like them being on the planet, you know. Chloe says everyone has to pitch in and share. And I think that's good that they have established that's kind of what they're doing on the ship.
Yeah. It's very interesting to see as this crisis in this early footage evolves. One, you don't know exactly what's happening, right? Like, they haven't told us anything except that it's all Okino footage.
Right. And there's very quick cuts and it's so dense in information.
Yeah. And we start seeing the situation of, like, Rush clearly, I don't know, Rush reacts in a very different way from a lot of people.
Right.
He tries to react very analytically. When people first start collapsing, he backs away from them.
Right.
he doesn't say very much, but he's very intently, like, watching TJ and Scott talk about things, and
I felt like this was one of the truest selves of Rush that we'll ever see. He's actually quite kind to Eli in it, surprisingly, and I'll point them out as we get along with those. But, I feel like this is... Because you almost want to suspect him a lot of time, you know, like when he runs out of ammunition and runs to the gate and all that kind of stuff. But it's always, he never abandons anybody. He doesn't like, oh, you're all contagious, I want to try and go through the gate. Which the narrative for him so far has been like, he only cares about his own survival, right?
Yeah.
And in this case, like, yeah, he kind of hangs back and listens and all that stuff. But you never see him do anything that is self-serving over other people.
Yeah, no, he basically seems to be... It's him processing everything much faster than everybody and deciding what the best course is.
And I think he just thinks we're fucked. That's why he's so
quiet. Yeah, I mean, they basically are.
But we skipped one little thing about Rush being kind to Eli a little bit. You know, and he's like, dude, Eli, don't eat the other thing. You already exposed yourself. We can't. It's not really being kind, but I really enjoy that relationship. Yeah. When Eli's like, okay, well, that tasted like shit. I'm going to try something else. And Rush is like, that's not how science works.
Yeah. If you're going to poison yourself, you have to only eat one potentially poisonous thing.
So we know what the poisonous thing is.
Exactly.
And I know that's not totally kind, but I sort of see that as a kind thing. Like, come on, like, don't do that.
It's definitely Rush being sort of mentory. I don't know if it's kind.
Well, there's but... he does like a soft arm touch when he does that though. So that's why I think it's like,
okay,
mentory. I'll take mentory. But I'm like,
nice,
that's
Rush.
That's what I need. Cause there's you know as well as I do that there's going to be about 20 episodes in the middle here ranging into second season where you're just like, Rush, just be nice to Eli for God's sakes.
No, never going to happen.
So anyways, Volker gets sick. Rush backs away, as you said. Chloe totally bites the dirt.
Yeah, like everybody, there's a big rapid set of collapses.
Right. Well, they hinted it with James because Eli's like, hey, James, you okay? And she's like, I'm fine. Leave me alone.
And
I had thought that was about Scott.
This episode is actually teasing something that's going to happen because Volker is one of the first to get sick.
Uh-huh.
And I believe, isn't Volker going to go into kidney failure here in the next 3 or 4 episodes?
Oh, no, that's season 2.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he dies technically in Common Descendants because he didn't get the treatment in the episode before, you know, when 12 minutes ago Rush comes, 12 hours ago Rush. Wow, that's really complicated to explain.
Yeah. Rush from 12 hours ago, along with Telford from before he died. No.
Anyways, that's next season. But, I mean, I don't know. Franklin does die.
But at the same time, I mean, we're talking about it's only 9 months out.
Right.
So it's possible that whatever they are coming down with...
could have exacerbated.
Could be affecting him.
It could be.
But it's not as careful of a foreshadow as I thought it was.
Right. I do like Rush's relationship with the Kino, because that whole scene about contagion and they can't go through the Stargate ends with, like, Rush just, like, taking out the Kino. I think he doesn't want anyone knowing his reactions to things.
Well, yeah, so he's staring really intently, and he's obviously really deep in thought. And the Kino, I'm like, Eli, what the fuck are you doing? Because the Kino just stares at him and gets closer and closer. Right? And then he's like, out, no.
Well, Eli, like, okay, there's a scene before this where, like, the Kino zooms in on Scott and Chloe flirting. And I'm like, why do you hurt yourself, Eli? Why?
Yeah.
And then he goes to Rush, and then Rush is like, ah! why do you hurt yourself, Eli? Why?
Yeah. He's Eli. He's a glutton for punishment.
Yeah.
I could quote Taylor Swift here, but I'm not going to, so... Moving on.
Yeah. Next, Rush is clearly upset by them wanting to stay, but he's not saying anything. So that's another point where I think that narrative Young is trying to place on him is just not going to ring true.
Yeah. I mean, he's...
He doesn't want to.
He's definitely still in data gathering and trying to figure out this situation, right?
Right.
Like, if he was on Destiny, he would have 10 ideas of how to fix this.
Right.
But he's not, so he doesn't.
Well, I mean, I guess what my point was is, like, I do think that survival instinct that Young is always complaining about, I do think that is very strong in Rush, for sure.
Yeah.
But I don't think it goes to the levels that Young's paranoia thinks it does. Because to me, it seems that he really doesn't want to stay there, but he knows it's the best thing. So
yeah, I mean, for safety.
Right.
Though
I'm pretty sure he thinks everyone will die on the ship without him anyways.
Well, yeah, there's that.
Oh my god, okay, next scene. What is Greer listening to? It sounds like Greer is singing in that band.
Yeah, it's pretty dramatically, I won't say obnoxious. I'm sure it's somebody's kind of music, but...
It's my kind of music, but I find it obnoxious. I don't know why. But then Rush and TJ argue in private.
Yeah, which is another one of those things. It's very clear in this episode that Rush respects TJ's, yeah, like, medical authority. He may question her individual decisions.
Right.
But overall, he respects that she is the, you know,
right,
the authority,
the ranking
on this.
Yeah. I think that's so interesting because he doesn't treat her the same way he does with Young. So
no,
it's not necessarily the powers that be that pisses him off. Because
it's incompetence.
I mean, right? And he,
oh, no. He absolutely respects people who are good at what they do, and he does not respect people who have not proven that they are good at what they do.
And Young just hasn't proven it to him in any way, shape, or form, it seems like.
Apparently, yeah.
Well, I mean...
Which is sad because we've talked a lot about how we think Young is a good leader, but...
Right.
Clearly, Rush doesn't think
there
he's
has
that good.
There has to be some background to them that pissed Rush off in the beginning.
That... is probably
and
true.
It could be that Young didn't want to go in the first place, and that could be the only thing that makes Rush despise him. Like, how? Why wouldn't you want to go to Destiny?
Well, that's true, yeah. I mean, just to have, being someone that was offered this position...
And turned it
and
down.
And turned it down, where Rush wanted it desperately and...
And almost lost it.
Yeah, almost lost it, based on things we've heard Telford say previously.
So then Rush, Eli, and Greer go explore, and they kind of find the home of those worm things, though they don't know that yet.
Yeah, they find a weird sort of smoking tree stump situation.
And I don't know.
I love Rush's, like, I'm going to put this piece of, I would say it's a handkerchief, but there's no evidence he has a handkerchief, so he just puts something over his mouth.
Just, like, tore off part of his shirt or something.
Yeah, I'm like, really? Like... As if that's going to save you from poisonous gas.
Right.
Like, what the shit?
I think he's just doing the best he can. And then immediately cuts to the rain, where Rush and Eli are underneath the...
A tarp
of some sort, and Eli is listing his top favorite movies. And I am so sad for him, because he chose Hackers.
Yeah, and I think this is one of those times...
Yeah.
Where I think that Hackers is on Eli's list, not because it's a movie Eli would like.
It's because David Blue likes it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I heard it on the commentary.
I've seen Hackers end up on lists like that because it's the movie that a person who is trying to pretend they're a hip youth with the technologies would like.
Right? And my brother's one of those people, and he always claims he likes Hackers. I'm like,
who
likes that movie? It's so bad.
No one that actually works on computers a lot likes that movie anyway.
Oh, he works in computers. He's a networking specialist.
Oh.
But I don't know. I just think it's an awful movie, and I always will. And I'm so sorry to our listeners who like it. You're allowed to, and you're allowed to think I have bad taste.
And within, freaking Eli, man, like within the top four of his top five list, he's already trying to wheedle all of Star Wars into it as one choice.
Right.
Like, oh, you made up this game. No one has said a single word about
it,
and you're already breaking your own rules.
I know. And like, Rush is not even playing, though.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he kind of, it's very sweet to me later on that he does quote a movie to Eli.
He does.
And that's really important to me, even if it doesn't actually happen to the Russian Eli we know.
Yeah, well, and it's weird in that I don't think Eli even catches it.
No, he doesn't. Young does, though.
Young does.
And it's not even that Young catches... I mean, yes, Young catches that it's Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, but he catches what that meaning is that Rush gives to Eli.
Yeah. So Rush kind of tried.
Right.
But their generation gap, like, right, sort of betrayed him in his momentary attempt to be a human.
If Eli's a movie nerd, there's no way he hasn't seen Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, though.
The evidence suggests that he hasn't.
The evidence suggests is that he thinks he's a movie nerd.
Yeah.
But yeah, oh, and the other part of that scene I do like is where he's like, this can't get worse. And Reg is like, wow, you have a remarkable lack of imagination.
Well, clearly, nothing could go wrong.
So James gets six. Marsden does. Then the little worms attack him. They dial the gate.
In the middle of the night, they are attacked by weird alien, not face hugger,
close enough,
chest burrower sort of things.
Right. They try to dial the gate, but can't get through, and then Chloe dies in a very dramatic fashion.
Yeah. And you see this thing again where, like, you were saying before, Rush wasn't saying anything when Young was telling them not to come back and,
right,
you know, created as kind of a quarantine thing. The instant he has a reason where he can just be like, we are dying here, we only might die there.
Right.
Like, he's like, dial the gate, Eli. But it's too late, and the gate is behaving weird.
I guess that's true. I forgot that he had asked them to dial the gate then. Huh. So I guess his survival instinct did take over there. But in general,
well, and it's, again, it's that immediate decision of priorities, right, with Rush, right? Like, right, yes, when it is a perfectly nice jungle,
waiting isn't going to kill us.
People,
yeah,
safe. Yeah, waiting, we're not going to die immediately.
Right.
When it is a jungle filled with evil creatures who are actively killing people.
Right.
That's bad.
Right.
We need to get out.
Jeez. Good point. I like that Eli's like, what the fuck?
A lot of people get murdered. Chloe gets murdered. Brody gets murdered. It's a lot of death.
Yeah, it is.
And that's our first commercial break, which is always distressing. Right.
Yeah, the actors who are reading that must have been like, oh my god, what the hell? Did I just lose my job? Twice? In the case of James. So next, they come through the gate again, and they're like, why are there two Kinos?
Well, so, I don't know if you have an expanded version. Mine cuts straight from Chloe's death to them on Destiny watching footage of Chloe's death.
Oh yeah, she barfs. Sorry, I forgot about that.
So, yeah, so then we're like, oh, wait, something really weird is happening here.
Right.
Because there shouldn't be footage of Chloe exploding gratuitously that Chloe can see.
Right, exactly. And then it's commercial break, right? And then it's them going through the gate. What the hell am I missing?
There's a real long scene where Eli's like, okay, what the hell is happening with the planet?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, I mentioned that, the what the fuck, and then it cuts before he says...
Well, so what's happening with this footage, and then Brody is talking to Volker and Park, and that's when they talk about having found the Kino before in flashback. There's a lot of weird
cuts. Like,
first we were in Kino stuff, and then we're in real time, and now we're in kind of sepia tone flashback about them finding the Kino from the first chunk.
I guess I just didn't think that the conversation was that important, so I must not have noted it.
It had Park and Brody in it.
I must have missed it. That's so sad, because I love them. They're my favorite. Other than Rush, obviously. They're my favorite real people who act like real people.
Yeah. Well, and then they go back to the ship again, and it's like James and some of the enlisted military talking about...
Right.
You know, like, what's on this tape? What, like, how can we be there dying? What the hell's wrong with you?
And then they cut to Rush picking up his own skull, right?
Yeah, there which we is go. Super, super weird.
I wonder if he ever realizes that's his own skull. Because, like, it's third or fourth modified alternate timeline Rush that survives.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if he watches that and he's like, that's fucked up.
I think he would think it's very cool.
Oh, that's true. Maybe.
Like, I mean, because he's still alive, right?
Right.
Analytically, even if you're a copy of a copy of a copy, you have to believe you're the only one in order to maintain your selfhood.
Well, he wouldn't think of him as a copy. So this is the first, like, time travel in an episode of anything sci-fi that did it right, right? So
yeah.
The idea is that if you time travel, you don't actually change the future. All you do is you create an alternate branch. So,
yes.
Like, all those people died. They're dead. Rush died twice or three times or how many times he died, you know?
Yeah.
And each time an alternate timeline gets created. So he's not a copy. He's just a part of a different timeline.
Yeah,
timeline.
You go back and you can never get back, well, unless you've got some dimension hopping stuff, you can never get back onto your previous timeline.
Right.
You're just creating a new one going forward because time is linear.
Exactly.
Or, well, not, well, not linear, really but it linear. Only moves one direction.
Right. Exactly. I was like, wait, hold on.
Yeah.
There's no thing.
Even if you move within it in a non-linear way, it is still linear.
Yeah. So I think that's one of the main reasons I love time so much, other than the fact that they don't really resolve how they resolve it, which is so cool
you
at the end.
Super need to read Fifth Act, but I'll be over here.
Okay. I'll read it. What is it?
It's a super long Final Fantasy VII fanfic that handles time travel exactly this way.
Okay, I've never thought to read Final Fantasy VII fanfic, but I will do it.
quick summary. Post-Advent Children Cloud
okay.
is out having a battle, accidentally smashes a mastered time materia,
uh-huh.
wakes up near the beginning of the events of Crisis Core.
Okay.
And manages to change some shit.
Ah, so Zack lives.
A lot of people live, and a lot of people do much better.
Does Gackt live? I mean...
Gackt also lives.
Genesis.
Yeah. Everybody lives, and they interact with Baby Cloud.
Nah.
Even, well, Cloud, yeah.
I'll give it a go.
It's beautiful. It's probably longer... Is it longer than Force Over Distance? I don't think it is, but it's quite long.
I need more novel-length fanfic in my life. Anyway,
the audiobook is 15 hours, so.
Oh, well, Force Over Distance is, like, 15 hours
70?
Per chapter. It's well over 70, for sure.
It's something like that, yeah.
Okay. Anyways, back to
Meanwhile, Rush picks up his own skull.
Meanwhile, Rush picks up his own skull. How cool is that? He watches himself do that. Chloe comes back. They're like, how is this possible? Rush doesn't know. Eli says alternate reality, and Rush is like, probably not. Like, that's his face.
Yeah.
Like, I obviously he understands time-space dynamics better than Eli does because of his education. And so he was probably like, not alternate reality, more like alternate timeline, dumbass. Like,
yeah.
But he's not sure, so he doesn't say anything.
Yeah, here's the thing, is like, he knows that there's... The people he's in this room with, right, is like TJ, right. Greer, Young, Eli, Chloe.
Right.
There's not a single person in that room that he could talk to about actual quantum physics
right.
and, like, science of the way time and the universe are that would understand a word that came out of his mouth.
And even if Volkner was there, he wouldn't want to talk
to him. He wouldn't want to. Well, and so, like, again, Rush's priorities, right?
Right.
There's no benefit to him trying to theorize
to Eli.
At all. And therefore... Silence.
So he's not at mentor mode for Eli yet, again.
Oh, no.
Like, he kind of was in water when he yelled at him, but now he's given up a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh, who knows?
So then TJ wants to quarantine everybody, and Scott shows a profound misunderstanding of how contagions works. He's like, but we were only there for, like, 30 minutes.
Well, yeah, and Scott's like, but this... recording never happened, so nobody's sick. And I'm like, yeah, but let's assume that the recording would have happened if you'd stayed.
Right.
Like, eh.
But, I mean, he at least understood that the Kino would go back in time later, so he's not totally dumb. He's just, you know, Scott.
Yeah. You know, like I said, I mean, there's no one in that room at that time that's really...
understanding what's going on.
Yeah. Nobody does,
right.
Even Rush. And Rush is the closest, and he's not helping.
Right.
So
then Brody dies, and I'm like, no! On
yeah.
the tape, right?
We saw the things take Brody down, so...
Yeah. They realize they have 22 hours before Destiny jumps back. And my favorite scene of Eli taping the Kino to his head, I think would be the greatest cosplay ever.
Yeah, I love that, like, it's so important to him that this is documented in some way.
Right.
Which is just so...
Eli.
Weirdly true of, like, the way we are with our Twitter and our social media and stuff.
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, and I just like that he finally gets validated for doing it. I don't know where it is, but, you know, at some point he's like, it's important to document this. Like, someone could learn from it. And then the Eli who's watching it is like, see, guys?
Yeah.
And I would be like, interested.
See, stuff is important. And
from here on, I would be really interested to see if Rush reacts to the Kino as negatively as he does in the past. So I'm going to keep an eye out for that.
That's, yeah, we'll have to watch. I'm pretty sure he still doesn't really like it. I mean, he still yells at Eli. He's like, what the heck are you doing, when Eli's attaching it to himself?
Doesn't Greer make fun of him? He's like, yeah, you look stupid as shit, man. So they also reveal that Scott was bitten and in a coma. And it's at that point that Greer leaves the room. And no one follows him to make sure he stays quarantined.
Well, he's Greer. What would really be the point?
Well, he probably wouldn't go anywhere that would put anyone in danger, but still, like...
Yeah. Greer is really interesting in this episode.
Right. He doesn't like seeing himself fail. Like, that is a concept that doesn't...
Well, and it's
work with him.
It's very internalized with him, mm-hmm. right? It's not necessarily fear or anger that's outward. It's directed entirely inward.
Right.
Like, I failed to protect those people.
And it's so interesting that he keeps saying, well, that wasn't me. Like, he's trying to protect himself by saying it wasn't me.
Even though he's clearly, already upset. Internalized that it is.
Right.
And is sad about, like, mad at himself about it and sad about it.
Right. Because you don't usually get to see evidence of yourself doing something.
Yeah. You rarely get to see,
like, what
how
would
you handle
happen.
The situation. Yeah. And know whether it was right or wrong.
Right, and he just watched himself utterly fail. But not to any fault of his own.
Yeah.
But that's going a little ahead. Because we have Eli talking to TJ.
Yep.
And we find out about his past. And we find out that he really respects TJ.
Yeah, Eli, he's just a good dude.
He is. Sucks that his dad left.
Yeah. Well, he is a Disney princess, so you can only have one parent.
I really liked the detail, because I feel like we don't get a whole lot of TJ outside of her relationship with Young. So even with that just little, like, basically she's Yanto Jones, my dad was a tailor, was just really nice to have.
Yeah, every little bit.
We don't get a whole lot. I don't think we get a lot more than that.
Well, and her, by the end of this season, she becomes so defined by...
the baby.
Not being a mother.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or by being about to be a mother or...
Yeah, so the rest of the season is dominated by mother. And then this second season is dominated by her thinking...
But she's going to die because she's got Lou Gehrig's disease?
Oh, no, that's the end of second season. So the first half is being defined by losing the baby. And thinking that it's still alive, but probably ascended, it seems like.
Yeah, or whatever happened...
I don't know.
On that planet thing.
We'll never know.
No. It's bananas.
I looked up why we'll never get Stargate novels, and it's because MGM went bankrupt.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so they don't own the rights to it.
Who owns the rights to it?
I don't know. I can't figure it out.
Let's buy it all.
I know. I was like, I'll write them. I will get that Eli Rush hug I want so desperately. Even if it takes me 8 novels to get there.
I mean, clearly somebody owns it because it was not on Hulu and now is and was on Amazon before that.
Right. I mean, Sci-Fi should... I'm going to look into it because Sci-Fi should own parts of it. No, they're just the distributor.
Or is it the other way around?
No, MGM is the producer for sure.
Oh, okay. So Sci-Fi owns distribution rights.
I think. We'll have to look into it. But yeah, I feel the same way about Stargate Universe I feel about Inception. I was like, why can't... I just want the novel rights. I will write so many novels in those universes. Because what we got is not enough.
Yeah. Oh my god.
I want whole novels that are just Dr. Park's point of view.
Just the Lisa Park novels.
Just the Lisa Park novels. Just Brody novels. Or just the science team. Like Volker, Brody, and Park. And like Rush and Eli are like kind of in the background a little bit. Anyway, sorry.
No, you're fine. We got super distracted.
Eli is afraid that his mom is going to give up, he says. Yeah. And then Eli realizes that in real time. And he gets pretty fucking sad, and Scott, you know, good friend, puts his hand on his shoulder, very sweet.
Yeah.
And then Eli has his heart-to-heart with Rush, where Rush is not as great as being kind, but he is in the end, he really is.
In the end, what do you know, he's the one that fucking pulls their asses out of the fire.
Right.
By, getting the information where it needs to be. And...
Wait, Rush does?
I thought he's the one that got the Kino there.
No, I think... Wait, did he? I thought it was Scott that...
Because it's his skull that's so far back there that it's...
Right. Well, see, what I had thought... Wow, I watched this twice today. I don't know why I missed this. What I thought was Rush had... It was very clear to me that Rush had figured out that the gate probably went back in time to someplace. He had hoped.
Yeah.
I don't remember him grabbing the Kino. Oh, he must have, because Eli had the Kino.
Yeah.
No, because, no, it can't be, because the Kino gets left, because Eli dies next to Scott, and then Scott sees the Kino, because we see Scott wake up alone. So Scott's the one that goes through the gate.
Okay.
So we'll maybe Rush picked up Scott's head.
Maybe?
Right? Unless there's two Kinos that they had the first go around, but I don't think so, because they make a big deal out of, like, why are there two Kinos on the second round?
Yeah, I have a very clear memory of a Rush grinning insanely and running through a Stargate, but
right.
I could be wrong. Obviously, like, you watched it twice today, and I watched it four times 2 weeks ago, so
wow.
we'll figure it out as we get through it.
Oh, man. God, this is so funny, because, like, when I did Torch Penis, I had no troubles remembering what happened. But there's so much information in Stargate Universe. Like, you forget little things that happen.
Yeah, well, and it, they do a lot of the same thing that some of the other shows I really like Criminal Minds and Leverage do, where you're getting moments, really intense moments of character building or bonding between two characters.
Right.
That actually, you know, are happening in the arc of this overall plot.
Right.
But as a moment to those two characters, it could happen anytime. It's just important.
Right.
So.
Well, I mean, so what I liked about the Eli Rush discussion, you know, Eli's like, you know, I was really terrified of dying. And Rush is like, well, like, you think you're alone in that? But I don't think.
Everybody hates dying.
Right. Rush didn't mean that in the way. So I do like that he has to kind of like backtrack and be like, look, Eli, that's not what I meant. What I meant is, what are you going to do with that fear?
Oh, yeah.
And so I feel like he's already thinking to himself, like, one of them needs to take the risk to go through the gate, and it might as well be him.
Yeah. Well, I think in some weird way, Rush kind of wants every situation to be solved by one person doing something courageous or crazy.
I don't know. That doesn't feel like him.
That's what happens in this one, though.
I guess.
That's what happened when Scott went off and got the limestone in Air.
Maybe secretly Rush but Rush really wanted him not to. No, he didn't want Greer to go off. That's right. I think Rush is just willing to sacrifice one over many is what it comes down
to.
Yeah,
I guess maybe.
And maybe Rush does really want to go out in the blaze of glory, because if he likes Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, that...
Maybe.
Maybe.
Well, and have we discussed that we think Rush might be a little bit suicidal?
You've discussed it. I'm not totally sold yet.
You don't agree with me?
I don't disagree. I'm just not totally sold.
Yeah.
Because the survival narrative's too strong.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Even if it's totally mostly made up in Young's head, it's still pretty strong. And, the evidence is there.
Like,
yeah.
Rush's priority is always on the survival of the greatest number of people.
Yeah.
And the most valuable people, so.
So the last thing I wanted to talk about, the Eli Rush thing, to me, when Eli's just talking about dying next to Rush, it looks like Rush is thinking about Gloria.
He's definitely in a very deep place.
Yes.
For sure. We are seeing a different side of him than we have usually seen before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's
given discussions that we had before about his wedding ring, he is looking down at his hands.
Yeah. So, oh, good point.
Absolutely.
And then I think it's really interesting to know how interested he is in Ascension.
Yeah, that's true.
And he kind of accepts that it might not ever happen for him, but it is very clear that he would like to ascend.
Well, I mean, wouldn't every scientist like to ascend?
I would like to ascend.
Except, like, just your mind lives on as pure energy and power and knowledge. And
you can visit the lower planes It's just the ancients have rules about that for some reason.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and I don't know. I almost wonder if Ascension has to do with Destiny's mission. I know Destiny's mission is about finding the pattern in the background noise.
Do we actually know that? I thought that wasn't even canon.
No, it's canon. So, okay, cool. Like, the whole point of... But here, the Ascension thing isn't. So, what I'm trying to say is... I feel like this is a hint to it, because later on we find out Destiny's mission is to find the pattern in the background noise of the Big Bang, which would suggest that there is a god, essentially. And then we also have those same... And I think it's very strongly hinted that the people that created the obelisks are probably those god... like alien created people, right?
Yeah, I mean, so, they're definitely even more powerful than anything we've seen from the ancients.
Exactly. And they are the ones that interacted with the people that died on the planet, on the obelisk planet, and somehow sent them to a sort of consciousness place that TJ's daughter also would go to. So I think, and that has ascension like qualities to it. So I feel like they really were actually trying to go towards this Destiny's mission being ascension in a different way than the ancients. And I feel like that's what Rush is going to get more and more interested in. If only we had more story.
Yeah, exactly.
Bet you didn't think I was going to go that far because of that conversation.
Well, the answer is always going to be if only we had more.
If only we had more. Oh, well... So anyways, the camera gets closer to Rush. It's like Eli, like, leaning on Rush at that point.
Yeah, I don't know. The Kino is a little too good of a camera person to really be doing what it's doing.
Right.
Suspension of disbelief, it's fine.
So, it's just all I could think of was when it gets that close, I was like, Eli, like, has to have, like, his nose, like, right up against Rush. Okay, anyways, Greer. Back to Greer.
Yeah, so Greer, like, kind of trying to shut himself down, and he had to go off and come up with his own narrative of what the hell happened.
Right?
Like, Rush has no problem with there being multiple versions of them doing things, but Greer is like, well, if that was me, but it's not the me that's right here because I didn't do that, like... He has to sit down and sort it out, and he's annoyed by his failure.
Right. And Greer doesn't know... Well, he doesn't know he's failed yet, but I think he knows that it's going
to
happen.
People have died. Right. Like, here's the thing. I think to him, even losing those first five or six people...
Right.
Including civilians under his care is unacceptable.
Unless it's Rush. Then he'll kick him.
He had no... He knew Rush could take it.
I guess.
And he knew Rush could live.
So then Chloe faints, right?
Yep, Chloe faints, and it's about the same amount of time the people in the recording got sick.
Yeah. So then Young is like, oh, well, goodbye, Volker.
Yeah, it's real bad.
Then Greer, so next it's back on the planet, Greer shows Eli how to use the gun, which always bothered me, because he never showed him how to do it on, Air Part 3.
Yeah. Here, take this. But I'm leaving.
I really love his, like, annoyance at Eli. Like, short burst, asshole. Like, Eli still isn't quite with the direness of the situation yet.
Yeah.
People have died. His best friend just died. And he's still like, woohoo, shooting a gun. And wasting ammunition they need.
Yeah. It's... It's weird. It's something about the kind of nerd that Eli is.
Well, it could be a protection mechanism, right? Like, just go into uber nerd, this is fun mode to forget how scary everything is.
Meanwhile, Greer is like, oh, I'm going to drop a hand grenade down this tree stump.
Right. And it works.
Yep.
I think Greer should know that Greer did that.
Yeah.
Let's see. I thought they were going to come, like, swarming out. Like, I swore, even though I'd seen it before, I swore to God that they were going to come swarming out, but they didn't, so thank God.
Yeah, I still think that every time, so.
Yeah. They go kind of hunting for them. Rush gets them so they can dial, but they can't get to Destiny, and it would be stupid to go anyways. TJ wants fire. I always like these little, like, just random comments. It just makes it so much more believable, you know? Like, you know, dire situation, and teacher's just like, man, I wish we had fire. And then the other guy's like, we don't have any wood, man. That's dry, at least.
Yeah. It's kind of the basics, right? Like, we have stuff to eat. We have water, but we're cold.
We're cold and it's raining. Next, Dr. Park shows up to quarantine, and I'm, again, as always, no! Not Lisa!
I know, we love Lisa. Don't kill Lisa.
Man. She's worried that there's not enough antibiotics, TJ is, but she doesn't even know if they'll work. Like, she even has that video confirming that she doesn't think they're working.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like,
and yet she's still doing it.
Well, and I think the early discussion she has with Rush is that the symptoms are similar to bacterial meningitis,
mm-hmm.
so, which is straight lethal if you don't get antibiotics.
Right.
What concerns me is that they seem to be like, let's give everyone a little antibiotics and spread it out. And I'm like, that's not how this works, guys. Like, you need a full run.
Right.
Or you're just going to breed
stronger
bacteria that is immune to what little antibiotics you have.
Well, I mean, there's very little about this that's very medically scientific, right? Like, bacteria doesn't grow in size. It's a single-celled organism. It can't literally grow bigger than it was.
Well, it could be if that's the kind of...
If it's an alien bacteria,
yeah,
I guess.
Well, no, I mean, some cells are real big.
Yeah, I know that. Like, they found, like, viruses that are bigger than, like, amoebas, and they're like, what the hell? That's never been possible. But, yeah. I mean, if the bacteria starts off as small and then grows as it gets healthier to be bigger, that doesn't seem...
Science. Yeah. Whatever.
Okay, anyways, back to the planet. Night vision, everyone's dying.
Yeah.
And Greer comes back just in time to see everybody dying, including himself.
Yeah. We do get a little bit of kind of badass Rush.
Yeah.
In this night scene. It's one of the first times we've gotten to see him be, like, an action hero.
Yeah.
We know he's an intellectual badass.
Right, right. I just want Young to take note here, because it's clear that Rush stays until he has no bullets left. Right?
Yeah.
He doesn't... If he wanted to try and escape through the gate before, he would have done it.
Yep.
But he stays with everybody... And I don't even necessarily know if he thinks that's for his own safety or if it's for everybody's safety or whatever. I think that would be hard to guess at. But he stays until he's out of bullets, and then he goes, fuck it. Someone has to try.
Yeah.
And then it's my favorite scene in the whole episode when, you know, Eli's like, you're crazy! You're crazy! And then Eli, in reality, like, goes, you're crazy! And Rush is just like, that's not me. Like, what the hell are you... He just, like, shrugs, like...
Yeah, Rush is like... You're surprised by this, why?
Yeah, like, why are you surprised? No one else is going to try it.
I do remember watching this episode very carefully and being proud of them for... They don't use either word. They only use ammo. They don't say clip or magazine.
Right.
But that at least means that they're not misusing clip versus magazine.
I do not know the difference.
It is beyond anything we need to know for this, but... There are people who are as nerdy about guns and things as we are about other stuff,
mm-hmm.
and the way that the word clip to refer to ammunition gets used in video games and stuff is often very, very wrong.
I think the clip is the holder of the magazine, is what I thought.
Well, so a clip is a thing that bullets literally go into individually,
right?
And that's how you load bullets into a magazine, which is what then attaches to the gun
and
contains the ammunition.
I was close.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyways, then Rush does that line, and he does it for a really clear reason, and it hurts me that Eli doesn't get it.
Yeah, but Young gets it.
Yeah.
And Young, and I think, I mean, you're saying, I hope Young takes note of the, you know, the... Rush stayed as long as he could and all that.
Yeah.
I would hope that, you know, Young being able to recognize that quote also realizes, like...
They have... Well, Rush is pissed
means,
off,
like,
that they
know. There's nothing else. I am literally walking to my death now.
Right. Well, but there's kind of hope in it, right? For a minute there, I thought we were in trouble. So I had thought, and I have nothing to back this up other than Rush seems to know what's going on. So far, 7 episodes in a row before anybody else does. that he thought there was a chance that he could go back in time and save the day.
Well, that's not the end of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, though.
That's true.
It's like, I thought we were in trouble, meaning, like, we are so royally fucked that I can't even express to you in words.
Oh, no, I know. I know.
How fucked we are.
No, it's a ironic thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So I know, I was just hoping that there was like a double meaning to it. Like, you know, it's a suicide run, but you know, maybe.
Yeah.
He does
in
know.
In the slightest, but he still has the humor to be sardonic about
right.
it.
Right.
So.
I mean, I think probably the more likely, summation of his action there is that he didn't want to die the other way. And he thought, someone has to go through the gate. Yeah. I'd rather die going through the gate than this awful clusterfuck.
So you are right that Kino stayed on the planet, but Rush did go through the gate.
Yeah.
So I think it's that Scott must throw the Kino through or something. I don't remember.
No, Scott dials the gate and goes through, I thought.
We'll figure it out.
Because you're watching it as we're talking.
Yep.
All right, anyways, then we see Greer die in the video. TJ finds out everyone's got water poisoned, essentially.
Yeah, they find the source of the disease, but basically there's no way they have nearly enough drugs or the right kind of drugs to treat it with traditional earth medicine.
And then Rush does his repeat of, well, fuck. For a moment there, I thought we were in trouble. Which is so beautiful. It's so beautiful. Like, it's not that Rush doesn't like pop culture or doesn't want to engage with Eli. This generation gap is kind of what it is.
It happens as you get older that, like, you like your certain things that you like.
Is what this feels like to
me. When you're Eli's age, you're just absorbing everything you can all at once. And at least I know when I was that age, a lot of it was kind of shit.
I can attest to that for me, for sure.
But, as you know, by the time you're Rush's age, he's, what, in his 50s? Like, you kind of know what you like.
Yeah.
And you're not necessarily out there looking for just piles and piles of new stuff to put in your brain. But that is something that Rush has kept in his mind is interesting. So.
You fan fiction writers, you take note. This is the second pop culture reference he's made. He's not against them. Even though his Captain Marvel one was pretty off.
Well, yeah.
I like my note in here. It said, God damn, this episode is good. Because, you know, when Scott wakes up on the video, like, oh my God, that has fucked with my mind so much.
Yeah,
so good.
Like, so here, everybody else is dead.
And then Scott wakes up.
And
next to a dead Eli. And he just screams. Yeah. And, like, I love that. Because he's always the action star. But it's good to see that even he has his limits.
Yeah, like, this is beyond anything that he's ever prepared himself or trained for.
Right.
And he starts talking to the Kino.
Right. I think he thinks Eli has a point. He's never been against the Kino the way everyone else is. I believe he's the first one to talk to the Kino when Eli starts doing the documentary stuff. I think he is. It could be him or Chloe.
I think he and Chloe do it, and they're like third or fourth.
Oh, shoot. Well, Eli, of course, is the first one. I don't remember. Oh, maybe Volker is the first one because he bitches about Salieri and stuff like that. And that's pretty early on.
I'd have to go back and watch the exact thing. I'm pretty sure Volker's a little later.
Okay, never mind. Anyways, Rush thinks that the venom could cure the sickness.
Yeah.
And TJ's like, well, that's a wild stab in the dark, but, you know.
Well, the only person we know to have survived it
is Scott.
Both got sick and got bit, so.
Right. No, I mean, I think that she's like, if this was a medical lab on Earth, we would not think that it's the first assumption. We would try and take everything into consideration. But since we're screwed right now and this is our best chance, then we have to do something like that.
So what happens, since we've been discussing how the heck did the Kino and the skull get there, is that Scott talks to the Kino.
And then throws it in.
Takes it right up to the gate and pitches it through.
Okay, that's what I thought.
And it rolls through and lands looking at Rush's unconscious at that point body.
Oh, I don't remember that part. I must have looked down.
Yeah, so whether Rush never got up again.
Right.
And that is just his body there.
Right.
We at least know that, like, it jumped them both back far enough.
Huh.
Far enough that Rush's freaking body, like, decayed to a bleached white skeleton. Which, incidentally, would not happen in the freaking jungle, but...
Yeah. Unless, well, it wasn't bleached. It was pretty yellowed, I thought, and brown.
Well, it was a skeleton with no flesh remaining on it at all.
Yeah, I just assumed that the wormy things ate all of it. Yeah. So Greer wants to go back because I assume he has something to prove to his not himself.
Sounds accurate.
But why the hell is Young going? You're the commander of the ship.
Yeah, but he really likes putting himself in danger.
God damn it, you need a Riker. You know, he has a Riker, he just doesn't use him.
Yeah. He has a Riker, and his Riker is the only one to have lived on the stupid video. But, right? You know.
But whatever. I'm gonna get him Kirk this shit and die again. Again, it's nighttime and it's raining. Not a great time to send them over. Eli does a calculation of an hour that they have, and Rush immediately goes, try for 45 minutes. And then, you know, Chloe's dying.
Yeah, because they all are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, James dies, and I had forgotten when I was rewatching it today that this timeline is not the timeline everything gets solved in. So I was like, I know James lives. What the hell? Not my precious baby.
It's very, very weird.
Yeah. And the next part is so fucking sad to me because Eli, you know, talks to Chloe. And there's a look that TJ gives when she looks over at Eli talking to Chloe. And it is very clear to me that she knows that Chloe's dead. And she's just not saying anything about it while he's doing it.
Yeah.
And yeah. That's heartbreaking.
Well, because it's very... That's important, right?
Right.
Sometimes.
It is. Like,
Eli needed to get out what he needed to get out.
Right.
And it didn't matter. Didn't matter to Chloe anymore.
Yeah, I mean, TJ did what she should have done, but it's still heartbreaking to realize that.
It's an incredible moment, and it's not a moment that you get to see in shows very often, right? Like,
this show is so deep.
Shows where people die tend to be, like, freaking, you know, Grey's Anatomy or whatever, where it's like,
right.
It's all about who's trying to save them or what we're doing.
Right. I do like that in this speech, I was so afraid that he was going to be like, I loved you, Chloe. And I really like that he just goes, you were my best friend. I've never had a friend before, and you're the best one I've ever had.
Yeah.
And I was like, thank you. That's the Eli I want, not the stupid pining after a girl who's made it very clear to you that she's not interested in you.
Yeah.
That's what I like. And then TJ goes out and cries, which is such a beautiful scene with Dr. Park. Comforting her.
Yeah. God. Yeah.
I love it. I want to be in an episode where I am best friends with Dr. Park.
Well, when they go back to make the like 10th anniversary movie, maybe we can be on the Kickstarter for that.
Right. Well, I already created a character. Hold on. Get ready for this.
Oh, dear.
It's someone who gets exiled from Ascension with the Ancients because they're, like, kind of like a political rebel.
Oh.
But they can't, like, you would think, oh, well, then they'll fix all the problems on Destiny. No, because Destiny has such old technology. She's like, this is like asking me to fix an Atari when I'm used to, like, iPhones. I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that thought made me happy. And I was like, then I'll be best friends with Lisa Park? And Rush will be my mentor because you're never too old to marry Sue, okay? You're just never too old.
Yeah. I can see that.
It kept me entertained on many a runs.
Good. I'm glad.
Anyways, Rush checks in with Young and he's like, just so you know, these people are all dead.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Ugh.
The what Scott does, God, what was the actor's name again? Something Smith, Brian Smith.
Yeah.
Because he looks such like just your typical military guy, I constantly am underestimating the range of emotion he can portray
yeah.
as an actor and he always impresses me. It's not fair that he has to impress me because I am stereotyping, but it always blows me away.
No, I will forever feel a little bad that one of the very first things I said in our first episode is Brian Smith's an okay actor.
Well, he was. I think he just got a million times better immediately.
Yeah, I mean, I think, no, that means he was a better actor to start with than we thought he was.
Yeah, it's true. He had potential that we didn't recognize.
He was keeping that, you know, under his belt until it was important.
No, you're right. I feel bad about that, too, because I agreed with that in the first episode, so sorry.
Well, I think we went from pretty good to, like, well, okay, he's good.
Yeah. I think it's just because we just look at how he looks, and he just looks like the typical white actor.
Yep. But you're absolutely right. He has a lot more range and variation
than we give him credit for.
I'm
trying to remember if Gorski had a lot of range, but I just didn't like his character at all, so I don't know if I paid attention enough.
Yeah, I don't remember him having a lot of range. I could go into a whole rant about Scarlett Johansson here and how much I love her and her ability to control her micro expressions.
Right, yeah, I don't understand why people think Scarlett Johansson, and for that matter, Kristen Stewart are bad actresses. They're not.
Such a boss. I haven't watched Kristen Stewart enough, but
Twilight, like, even Rob Patterson with Twilight was just like, you know why we're bad actors in it? Because the lines are stupid, and it's just not something you can act well.
Yeah, like, the movies are bad because of the script and the source material.
And Bella is supposed to be flat as shit. She did exactly who Bella was. But she's pretty impressive in other stuff. And I feel that way about ScarJo, too. Like, she has a lot of control.
I could talk about the movie Lucy for, like, ages. The thing that people complain about with Lucy was that, like, Scarlett Johansson was so very, like, flat and boring in parts of it.
Yeah.
But the fact that she can do that, like, she wasn't just being flat and boring, she was being inhuman.
Right.
To the point where, like, you know, as Black Widow, she has this incredible range of micro expressions of, like, fear and smugness and secrecy. And, like, it is freaking incredible.
Like, in Winter Soldier, she was really good.
Yeah, oh, my God.
Yeah, I agree. But, like, the thing is, like, there's lots of inhuman male characters that we don't, like, automatically be like, oh, you know, he's so flat.
Well, for sure. Well, that's the people that don't like characters like Data and Spock. That's how they feel about them.
But Data has, okay, Data, we got time to do this, right? Data has emotions. He just doesn't understand that they are emotions because he has been scared even before the emotion chip.
He has processing subroutine errors, which are the equivalent of human emotions.
Right. That's what I always think about human emotions. I'm like, really, they're errors in our programming, our neurological programming. Because how many times have you had an emotional reaction that is not rational and you know it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. There's a chapter. There's a chapter of Force Over Distance. See, I'm bringing this full circle.
There we go, full circle.
That is from the point of view of the AI.
Oh, I don't know. I must have fallen asleep through that
As it's modifying its own programming.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like, because Rush explains to it, like, what affection is and what love is and what worry is.
Right.
In computer terms.
Oh.
And it's doing that itself.
Right.
Where it's like, you know, it's running wasteful algorithms worrying over him.
Right, and you know what? We do that too, right? So
we absolutely do. We sit there and we know, like, oh, God, you know, there's nothing I can do about this problem.
Right. But we still worry about it. But also, like, just having people teach us new things. Like, I mean, I know I've come to you paranoid about a million things at my job. And you help me put it into perspective and change my feelings on it. So you can even reprogram him how you're feeling. And characters like Data can too.
Yeah, you can contextualize what you're feeling and what your brain is doing to you. Even if you can't necessarily control it.
Right. So I guess the long and short of it is people who don't like flat actors who are purposely being flat are assholes. And we're slightly assholes for not liking Brian Smith's acting at first. Because he has to have that robotic quality to him. He's a lieutenant.
Well, and that's exactly. I mean, if it goes three layers deep, right? Like, you've got Brian Smith playing Matthew Scott, and Matthew Scott is like a
Playing.
kid with all this information in his head, and he's young and he's got this history. And then there's Matthew Scott playing Lieutenant Scott,
Right.
right? Putting on the strong face and the command and the bearing
Right.
and being a leader.
Right.
And of course he's going to behave differently, you know, in the same way that I don't know. I'm going through this right now because I'm going to be a manager of a store.
Right.
And in my head, I'm like, oh, like, I have to be a totally different person now.
Yeah. At
But you
work,
can't.
you can be you with me.
But yeah, because you need to suddenly be like the person that is a manager of all these other people.
Right.
Yeah, anyway.
You'll do fine. But you can worry, you can waste some
But I'm running
subroutines on
wasteful
worrying.
algorithms worrying about it.
So anyways, everyone dies around Scott. Took us 10 minutes to get there.
Yay!
And then Scott, even though I just made fun of him for being stupid, he does the smart thing and realizes he needs to throw the Kino in. So he waits for the solar flare to happen, throws the Kino in, and hopes that
Yeah.
that's going to save everybody. And I just love the scene where Rush is just waiting dejectedly in the gate room.
Yeah,
Because he
like it's the
knows.
situation again where he knows that there's nothing they can do.
Right. And he's going to die again. He knows
Yep.
that even if some miracle happens, that an alternate timeline gets created again, which he has no reason to think will happen, he knows he's going to die.
Yeah.
And I feel like he and Eli have that moment together. And that's important to me because Eli Rush mentorship is always important to me.
Wow. So important to you.
I know.
I'm beginning to realize I give way less concern for Eli than you do.
I used to hate Eli, so I think maybe it's just because I did such a full 180
Oh.
that now I care a lot. And I feel like
Yeah.
Eli is the only thing that gives Rush humanity a lot of the time. So.
Yeah. I remember human happening a lot earlier in the series than it does.
No, it's like right before Incursion. I mean,
Yeah.
the Tick episode happens, and then I think it's Incursion. Because it should happen after the coup.
That sounds right.
Yes. Anyways.
So yeah, we don't actually know what happens in the timeline where they go to the planet and find Scott's Kino.
Right.
Because Scott's Kino doesn't have the everybody dying stuff. It just has like them going onto the planet, some people dying.
Oh, that's a good point.
Because it's a fresh Kino.
Yeah, because that old Kino is not going to be out there anymore. Oh, that's a
Yeah.
really good point.
And they're not gonna find the human remains on that planet either.
Right.
Because no one went through the gate.
Right.
But yeah, so we don't know what happens, but we assume that they show up there in daylight. They find this Kino, watch the Kino, and decide, okay, clearly Scott's not a crazy person. We're just gonna go get this stuff. And
Right.
I guess if TJ went into the water and found immediately the bacteria,
Right.
then she would be like, okay, yeah, and that would justify this random recording of Scott from the future.
Right.
Yeah.
No, it would work, but what's sad to me is if that's the truth, which it is, I mean, the commentary, they made it sound like they would be able to watch all the keynotes, but obviously that's not true if because they wouldn't have both just sitting there when they
And
came
yeah,
through.
unless they
Came back at
th
the
then
same
it's a
moment.
second timeline where they find two Kinos.
Right. Well, unless, no, because if he sends it back in time, it would go next to the Kino that was sent back in time the first time, next to Rush's skull. Because then
Maybe.
they would be coming through at that time instead of the first group coming. You know what I'm saying? Because it's an alternate timeline. So they would.
He's throwing it through at
Oh,
a different
right,
point in
you're
the
right.
solar
If
flare
it. If
cycle
it.
as well.
Right.
So we don't know if it's jumping the exact same amount of time.
And then, anyways, you're right, because if they jumped timelines, if they created the alternate one, the first Kino wouldn't be there anymore. You're right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's not predestination paradox where even the first
God,
people found remains at
can
a
I just
Kino.
tell you how much I hate predestination paradoxes? It's like lazy science fiction. It was good once. Stop doing it, guys.
Yeah. I feel like there's the two ways of doing it, right? Mm-hmm. There's what this episode did.
I feel that's rare. They never do what this episode
did. It is much rarer because it's much harder to explain.
Right.
And it's much harder to resolve.
I think they did pretty beautifully with that. Like, I love how they just cuts.
But it took some manipulating.
But yeah.
To get there. And even then, they couldn't have a nice ending, right? The thing about Predestination Paradox that's so tempting is that your ending can just come together beautifully.
I think this came together beautifully anyways. Yeah. But that makes me sad, though, because all of Young witnessing Rush not being a shitty human and Rush and Eli having a little bit of bonding, that's all. Yep. It's all gone. It's all erased. It's all gone. It never happened.
Yep.
And then they just go on in their super drama way and just keep going.
Yep. So this is in this episode is both an incredible piece of science fiction.
Yes.
And has very little impact on the plot.
On the emotional. Well, no, what it does is shows us the potential for the relationships.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
And so, oh man. Oh, so good. So good. I just really love that they don't actually resolve it. That it's just Scott throwing the Kino through the gate. And you, like, this is a show that doesn't think we're stupid.
This episode in particular, yeah. Yes. Like, this is a piece of science fiction.
Yeah. Use your brain.
For people who want hard science fiction, so.
Right. Oh, so good. That's my final thoughts on it, is that this episode is good.
So good.
I don't need to elaborate anymore. How about you?
This episode is about what great actors Brian Smith and Jamiel Walker-Smith and Robert Carlyle are.
Well, we always known that Robert Carlyle's a great actor.
I'm just throwing him in there because he does some heavy lifting without words in this episode.
Oh, yeah, he does.
He has a lot of meaningful looks and silences and...
Oh.
Yeah. So good.
Oh, God. It's so good. So good. I'm like gobsmacked for words. I just can't even.
Yeah.
Oh, so good. And now, and the next episode is going to be Life, huh?
Yeah, it is.
Which will be fun.
Yep.
I spent this whole last podcast looking so forward to Time that I feel like I don't want to let it go.
Yeah, I think, we're headed into a good set of episodes here.
Oh, no, it's... From Time on, I think it's 100% the best show ever.
Oh, I'm glad. You're welcome.
You know, thank you. But now you can understand why it took me a while. It's because those first 7 episodes, I just... Like, I liked Air well enough, but... And I liked Darkness a lot.
Yeah, but I mean, Water just almost killed it. To me, I think the first 5 are actually quite strong as well.
Yeah.
I think Water. You have Water and Earth, and it is a hard barrier to get past.
I really, actually, now that I'm rewriting the narrative in my head, that is definitely what happened. Because I remember watching the first 5 and being like, wow, this is really good. And then I got to Water, and I was like, this is awful.
Yeah.
And then I got to Earth, and I was like, I am not watching this anymore.
And I think, here's the deal. As much as I like Young as a character... And as much as he's a good leader on this ship...
Right. Young on Earth is annoying.
He's actually miserable to be this focal character for an episode.
That's a good point. And they got 2 in a row.
Yep. And they did 2 in a row, including him doing a bunch of stuff that makes us super uncomfortable with other people's bodies and...
And also him putting the ship in more danger by, you know, trying to save Scott.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's just pretend those episodes don't exist.
Yep.
All right. Well, unless you have anything else to say, I guess we need to sign off.
I think it is time. Where can they find us on the internet, Boom?
Hold on. I'll tell them in a second. I am too busy laughing at your joke. They can find us at sgupodcast.tumblr.com, and you may leave us an ask, and we will answer it. You may reblog our things, and we will probably answer that as well. Because all we like to do is talk about this show these days.
Yeah. And if you reblog it, then Cetra's phone gets a little alert that says, you got notes. And then I go and read them. It's very exciting.
Yeah, but you don't do any of the replying. It's just me.
No. I get excited that we got notes. And I go, Boom must be doing a good job.
So I guess what you should say is, if you want to talk to Cetra in particular, you should tag her, because I will be, if you answer something, I will be the one that likely replies.
Yeah, I'm real bad at social media, so I'm sorry, but I will probably go through a phase where I just do an insane amount of everything.
Everything. I look forward to it. I look forward to having arguments with you about a look, a 3-second rush look.
Yeah, we've had some pretty deep arguments about
everything.
Rush's opinions.
God, we really should just rename Charlie Foxtrot to Rush Apologist Society.
I liked You Are Here as an alternate title, actually.
Oh, yeah, but that was one of our first ones, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I really do like that one, too. But I swear to you, after this episode, I'm going to get that You Are Here shirt, and the rest I own, and I will do an Eli cosplay where I tape the Kino to my head.
I love it.
I do, too.
And then if anyone figures it out that you're, like, Eli from the second timeline in time, you're like, now we can be friends.
You passed the test.
That's the goal of every cosplay, is that somebody's going to walk up to you and be like, we are the same because I understand what you're wearing.
I'm going to figure it out. Denver Comic Con, just you wait. Alrighty. Well, I guess we should say goodbye.
Okay.
Bye.
Goodbye, Internet.